With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details. Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Okay, round two. Name something that's not boring.
A laundry? Ooh, a book club. Computer solitaire, huh?
Ah, oh, sorry. We were looking for Chumba Casino. That's right. Chumbacasino.com has over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
This is Julio Rodriguez, and this is the Lookout Landing Podcast.
What's up, sports fans? It is the Lookout Landing Podcast. I'm your host, Matthew Robertson, and we are going about our lives pretending that everything is normal, despite the fact that our entire worlds have been flipped upside down. Today, though, we are soldiering on through the power of the internet and talking about the Mariners, talking about supporting the Mariners, loving the Mariners, hating the Mariners. And to do that today, I'm joined by a wonderful guest. You might know her as a writer and editor at UW Dog Pound, the SB Nation site dedicated to all things UW sports. Also a local stand-up comedian, the one and only Gaby Lucas. What's up, Gaby?
Hi, thank you so much for having me.
Of course, thank you for coming on the show. How are you doing in this post-sports universe?
I'm doing fine, but a little bit weird. I considered for a moment putting cornhole on my TV the other day, and then I knew that my brain was broken. So, but yeah, it could be worse. It could be better.
Have you watched any Korean baseball?
I'm so excited for it, but I only care about Daeho Lee's team, but obviously that's a lie because it's just nice to have any baseball on, and I have a couple other stand-up friends who like different teams. We're lifelong Korean baseball fans now, and so I was going to watch some games with them, but I've been kind of a little twerp about being tired, and so I'll be like, oh, it's 10 o'clock, that's, can I stay up for a full 3 hours? And then I go to bed at 10:30 and don't, but I'm fully intend to be, to watch as much of that as possible in the coming coming months, but who knows how long this will last.
I know, yeah, you got to be careful about naming any sort of timetable right
now. Yeah, this unending time.
Yeah, I got my first little taste of the Korean League on, I guess, Friday night / Saturday morning in like my 2 a.m. haze, and I was so excited because I realized I could fall asleep to baseball again, which I normally love doing. But it was also, I mean, the whole thing is just so strange because there's the no fans thing on top of like Carl Ravitch from his home office, like looking haggard, you know, like he looks like he doesn't want to be there. I'm sure they paid him enough to justify him being up at 5 in the morning. But I was like watching it like actively feeling bad for him. And also, like, you know that he doesn't know that much. Like, he probably did the, like, college student, like, learn everything in two nights thing. But, like, most of their conversation, him and the color commentator, was not about the actual game, which is also kind of a bummer. It's like, if you're going to announce this game, at least tell me something, you know? Don't just talk about the weather or food or whatever you're talking about.
Yeah, be like, did you know in Korea they eat the sesame oil and chili powder for things? Like, what? No, yeah. No, that's a similar thing, like, to that, but in a way that's entertaining, is I enjoy watching any, like, English broadcast of gridiron football, or on the other end, like, any American broadcast on rugby, because it's all pretty dumbed down, and, like, the broadcasters only know so much of what they're talking about, or, like, they'll have one person who really knows what they're talking about, and everyone else is like, ooh, they wear shorts.
Yeah.
And they don't, but that is usually fun, because you have a choice of whether to watch it, and this is, I feel like, a little bit depressing because of all the reasons you just stated, and that's our only option.
Yeah, it's a total, and this is kind of unfortunately timely because he just died, but it's a lot like Fred Willard in Best in Show, where he's doing the dog show announcing, and he's like, why do they have them run? And the other guy's like very impatiently explaining everything to him.
Oh man, I love that that whole troupe of like Waiting for Guffman, Best in Show, and Mighty Wind was my childhood, and I love them all so dearly.
I know. It's been such a good rewatch period. That is one, I think, a huge winner of the quarantine, to use a sports radio term. Biggest winner of the quarantine.
Yeah.
Definitely old movies and TV shows.
So but true.
The Korean League, it was nice to just, like, have the rhythms of baseball back again. Like, I found myself doing a little, like, armchair coaching, even though I know nothing about any of the players. Like, this dude was working on, like, a 9-pitch at-bat, and I started yelling at the pitcher, like, throw something out of the zone, make him chase. And I was like, what am I doing? Like,
yeah, don't dip your shoulder. I don't care if it's low and outside. You're going to pop up. You're going to pop up on a slider on the edge. Like, yeah, I fully get that.
Yeah, I convinced myself that I know a lot about these players by watching them take, like, one swing. I was like, oh, this guy can't catch up to the inside fastball.
And,
like, it was just so funny to catch myself while I was doing it. Like, oh, man, you miss sports this much. And I think we all do. So, like, I'm sure a lot of people at home are relating to this. But I just found it so funny that, like, literally within 3 pitches, I was like, oh, I figured this league out.
Yeah, I know their quirks. I could take over for this commentating job. I haven't actually, like, started watching it yet, at least consistently. I am very much excited just to have that kind of presence on, because even, you know, when there's baseball that, for example, Sunday midday stuff, where maybe you're not actively watching it, but you, like, have it on the radio while you're working on, you know, I don't know, cutting a branch off of a tree for no reason or something, you know. Sure. It's just nice having that presence. So I think even if it is at 10 p.m. and that feels a little bit awkward, just I think having baseball in any way is kind of this nice mimicking of giving us some little semblance of normality. And so for that, I'll be grateful for.
Absolutely. And it's weird for me personally too, because I just moved. So, like, I didn't have any normalcy at all for, like, the last 3 weeks. And that's actually why there was no episode from me last week. Sorry to our millions of listeners who I'm sure noticed my absence. but, like, once I finally got set up in this new apartment and I, like, turned on baseball, I was like, I could finally, like, you know, relax my shoulders, unclench my jaw and all that. It's not
it's
fun,
such a, like,
I would say. Sorry, yeah. Not a lot of fun to move during a pandemic due to the circumstances surrounding the novel coronavirus, COVID-19, which I encourage all of you to look up.
Have you heard?
It's a historic moment, guys. It's the first episode from my new apartment.
That's the history in this episode. Certainly not anything else happening outside. It's that this is from your new apartment.
Yes. Welcome, all of you, virtual MTV, to my new crib.
Boom.
Have you been watching The Dorktown about the Mariners, the John Boyce documentary?
Yeah. So I watched the first 3 episodes. And so for background, I've been, the only place I've been going outside of my own house is my sister's, because we obviously started isolating in early March and haven't done anything. And most importantly, She has Animal Crossing, and I do not. So I've been going over there to play that, and then in the meanwhile, we would like play Animal Crossing, and then watch an episode of Dorktown. Me, her, and my brother-in-law. And so I've only seen the first three episodes because I've been waiting to go over there to watch it with them because I feel like it's committing like Dorktown adultery if I watch it by myself. But I'm so freaking excited because, I mean, there's no, you don't need to have a because, just everybody knows it's, at this point, everyone knows how good that series is. And the ending of episode three is so like joyful because you get to see that and experience that all over again, and so sad because of how they the way that they end it, going, we're just going to end it here because this is where it should end. And just the, I mean, I would call it dramatic irony, but I mean there's nobody, we all know, you know, why that is, and just having that knowledge in the back of your head is so melancholy. It's weird to experience such a high and a sad knowledge of why that high never lasted all at once. But yeah, I'm really, really, really excited, especially because my best friend growing up, her first crush was Ichiro. So,
oh, obviously,
we're gonna come up on that.
What a hug.
Yeah, obviously.
There was a lot that, like, it was that weird phenomenon watching, because I've finished it now. I've watched all six episodes, and it's such a weird phenomenon to like feel like you're being both very seen and also like somewhat attacked, you know what I mean? Because like, he's talking about things that I knew, like a lot of it, the early stuff I didn't know, but like everything pretty much past 95 I was like, okay, I'm familiar with this. But then it would be like, and this is like the comedy part starts to come in, or like the
Jay Buter's sort of barfing
sort of the like the reminder of how actually shitty the Mariners are, and it's like, oh yeah, I've been devoting my life to this, like I'm the idiot here.
Yeah, you know,
the players are just, they don't have a say, a lot of them, like they just end up on the Mariners and they're making millions of dollars.
Exactly.
Me, the guy at home who's choosing to watch them, I'm the real loser of the Mariners history.
Yeah, and I think it's so interesting because up until, I mean, UW has had, definitely has like a really storied history, but for much of Seattle sports, it's like you have the Sonics with their 70s, what was that, 75, 77, or you know, nobody correct me, I'm not a huge basketball fan, NBA title, the Storm have their couple, and then the Seahawks, obviously now, like, kick ass, and, but it's really, really strange because watching, I feel like now, nationally, people associate Seattle with being a successful, mostly sports town, but it really, the Mariners are such a perfect distillation of like the experience of being a Seattle sports fan, because it's so much agony. And I know everyone from every city claims to be, you know, sad all the time. And I'm not going to try to invalidate that, because that's what, you know, when you watch sports, most of the time, you're sad things are going to happen more often than not. But it really was, I feel like the Seahawks' recent success for the last decade or so has kind of taken away from the fact that really, for most of Seattle's sports history, it's looked much more like the Mariners' history than the Seahawks in the 21st century. So it's, yeah, I totally know what you're saying, and it's such a strange thing to kind of compare side by side.
And the weird part, too, like, I find it very funny that this happened to pretty much every Seattle team. It's like all their periods of success are so dense. Like, the Mariners have 95 to 01. Like, UW has, like, little pockets, you know? But no one really has, like, UW has what, the championship from the 90s and then
in the 60s. Yeah. They have Sorry, I don't mean to interrupt.
No, you're good.
The NCAA recognizes UW football for four championships. UW only claims two of them, and that's 1960, 61, 90. Either way, it's 91 and 60 or 61. I can't remember because I'm bad. But yeah, sorry, go on.
Yeah, well, then it's just like, you know, and then you have, I guess, you know, Tuiasa Sopo takes him to the Rose Bowl, and then cut to what, 6 years later, they don't win a single game. Oh, like, Jesus. It's so jarring how, and the Mariners have very similar things. Like, 01 set literally the record for most wins ever, and then by 2004, they're the worst team in the league. Like, it's just so, it's unbelievable how that happened to all of the teams. And like the Seahawks are great now, like you said, but in the really the whole 90s, they were an afterthought. And even a little bit into the pre-Hasselbeck 2000s, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, no, definitely. And I think it's interesting because, and especially with UW, I think is probably when I think about the history of sports in Washington, that UW has the most, I think I've used this term already in the last 5 minutes, but they have the most storied history as far as success, although that's also kind of, you know, easier to do on some level when you're a program that has, you know, a crap load of other sports. I mean, they're between their softball and men's and women's crew and football, it's like, you know, you have can kind of concentrate your resources in certain areas where you already kind of have an inclination towards. But yeah, I mean, other than, and even then, yeah, like you had 2008 and you had like that collapse after Neuheisel, and even during then it was still kind of a slow decline after Don James. And and it's weird seeing that even with all of the downs that, in this case, UW football has had, thinking that, oh, this is still probably the most sustainable or consistently successful sports, quote-unquote, franchise, if you want to call it that, or organization in Seattle. And you're like, oh, that might not be that might explain why we're all so depressed and awkward all the time, if that's our high bar.
Well, it does mirror like the sensibility of Seattle very well, which I also find very funny. Like, that's why I've always thought, like, you know, the Dodgers of recent years, like, yeah, they're really good, but they don't actually do anything. Like, they never win the whole thing. That to me is like so LA that it's incredible. Or like for the Mets, you know, being like from New York, but like kind of associated with the shittiness of New York, while the Yankees are like the glamour of New York. It's so funny how all those things just like play out according to the city that they're in. Or like, I went to college in San Diego, and like the Padres are just kind of a non-entity, because you realize like if you live in San Diego, sports really don't matter. Like, if it's 75 degrees and sunny every day, it's dumb to get worked up over, like, you know, your bullpen or whatever, or like your fourth starter. It's like, who cares?
Yeah, that's so true. I feel like different cities are so, I mean it's kind of a self-fulfilling prophecy, but they really do feel like they personify, or the teams in many cases, you feel like, yeah, that should be the team for, you know, insert city here. And it often works out where it totally feels like they parallel each other very well. And I think you're right that much of Seattle sports history, and especially the Mariners, feels very Seattle.
How much do you think the Mariners losing, like, actually weighs on you? Because I know for me, like, it doesn't affect my day-to-day consumption of the Mariners really at all. Like, it's not like I'm ever sitting there watching a game being like, you know, if they make the playoffs this year, it'll be the first time since 2001. You know what I mean? But, like, it's definitely affected my brain in a lot of ways. Just, I mean, most of my life has been the playoff drought. So it's like, it's interesting to think about, like, how that's subconsciously sort of seeped into my brain. And then when you get seasons like 2014, 2016, 2018, where they're like in the playoff race, it obviously heightens things because, you know, there's extra weight on it. But it still wasn't like I was thinking about like the crippling weight of not making the playoffs for that long. So have you ever thought about that? Like, when you're watching the Mariners or thinking about the Mariners, how much does the continued losing actually like present itself?
Yeah, I don't, I think I'm kind of similar to you in that it kind of reminds me of just, and this is again another kind of stupid Pacific Northwest metaphor, but it really does kind of remind me of how our crappy weather is so, you know, when you get like, people will go like, oh my God, we just got sun for the first time in 62 days. And you're like, what? Oh man, I didn't even think about it. But now that I think about it, you know, the last 62 days have sucked shit. I hope I'm allowed to swear.
Definitely allowed to swear.
Woo. Yeah. And then you realize, you're like, yeah, this is pretty, like, I should be very beat down about this. And I am, like, it is this kind of all consuming, like, it frames the way that you, in the case of our crappy, depressing climate and everything, like, it frames the way that you go through your life in that case, but you know, in the Mariners, it's just frames your assumed, I feel like our assumed reality is you're like, yeah, whatever, it's gonna suck, who cares? But yeah. But after a certain point, you're just, it's just accepted. So for me, it's almost like a fun little tradition. I'm like, I get so excited for the Mariners, but like not for them to be good, just for them to exist every year.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And I would say that like accepting fate, who cares mentality is the number one thing that's carried over from my Mariners life to my real life. Like mm-hmm. It's very easy for me to just sort of discard things, even things that I do really care about in real life. And it's been, oh, it didn't go well.
Yeah.
Fuck it. Who cares? You know, that's very, you know, been watching the Mariners for my whole life, kind of ripple effect.
Yeah.
It's also tough because you don't want to be that like nihilist asshole who's like, oh, why do you care about this? It's just, you know, like I don't want to ever become the like sports ball guy where you're yeah, you know, where it's like, oh, I feel like part of me is a little, I don't know if jealous is the right word, like envious maybe of the people who can like turn it on and off. Whereas for me, it's like if the Mariners tempt me like they did a couple times earlier this decade where it's mm-hmm. like, or last decade I guess, where they almost made the playoffs and it doesn't happen, there was like, I'll admit, there was part of me that was like, oh man, it would have been nice if they just had sucked all year, because that's why 2019 was kind of liberating for me when they did the full rebuild and
yeah.
I knew from day one they were gonna suck. I was like, I can just watch the Mariners this year, I don't have to analyze anything, you know?
Yeah, no, I fully get that, and I definitely agree. Like, I think there's a difference between just accepting things and, you know, and being like, yeah, it'll probably suck, who gives a crap, and being that asshole who's like, why do you care, this is stupid. Like, you can still be invested in something without turning it into the entire basis for which you know, your day is decided whether you're happy or not. And that's how I kind of feel about sports in general, but especially with baseball and with the Mariners, because they historically are going to bring you more pain than otherwise. But just also, I mean, if you're a baseball fan, even for the best team in the ever, and you, your day-to-day mood is decided by whether or not your team played well, you're going to have a lot of really bad days. I mean, that's a 162 game schedule. You're going to be sad for at least a couple months worth of games. And so, yeah, I think you can be kind of existential without being a total nihilist, like invalidating douchebag about it.
But I worry about that a little bit with the players themselves. Like, once the losing, you know, like guys who have been here for years on bad mm-hmm. teams, you have to think at some point they're like, you know, as long as the checks keep cashing, sort of thing. And it's like, they're going to try, but they're not going to care. Cause there's a difference. You know what I mean? Like, mm-hmm. you can go out and give your best, but like, there are definitely some guys who, they'll never admit it, but like guys from the 2010s, really the mm-hmm. entire decade of the Mariners, who were like, I'm just playing baseball, man. Like,
yeah.
If we lose, I still get to go home to my family or whatever. If we win, it's just a little bit better, but like, I'm not going to lose sleep over it. And part of me is like, yeah, that makes sense. I wouldn't blame you for just accepting that you're, you know, it's like any job. Like, sometimes you don't love it, but you go there, they pay the bills. Like, who cares, you know?
Yeah.
And a thing from the Dorktown documentary, I don't know if you've fully gotten here yet, but like one of the themes that keeps coming up and that is actually like in multiple different people throughout the Mariners' history is like, I didn't realize how much the geographic isolation mm-hmm. really got to some of these guys. Because obviously like, I'm from here. I know that it's far away, but
yeah, same.
I guess I don't think about it the way someone would if their family lives on the other side of the country, you know? Like, because you're always like, oh, yeah, we're out here, and, like, we get to live here for, what, 7 months of the year. Then you just go home. But for them, it's like those 7 months are – all you're doing is thinking about how you're not with your family, and then it's just like baseball is never going to happen if all you're thinking about is how much you don't want to be here, you know?
Yeah.
I never thought about that. Like, I know it sounds foolish, but, like, I never once realized how much a guy from Florida would hate playing for the Mariners.
Yeah. Well, I think there's a lot of things about the Northwest that, like – for people like you and me who are from here and don't know any better, we just take it for granted that kind of suck, whether that's the weather or how far away we are or the fact that like our culture is for the most part kind of like awkward. And like one of my friends is from, he's from outside of Philadelphia. He's a comic. or, you know, kind of was. He still does it sometimes. He described Seattleites as a bunch of depressed Scandinavians, and then I was up after him, and I came up on stage in, like, a Dale of Norway sweater. and like, kind of stuff like that, that we kind of, you know, you take for granted if you're from here. You're like, whatever, but you don't have any perspective or any, like, viewpoint where you kind of can think about or really give a crap about the idea that, like, there are people who live in places where you can see blue sky from November through February. Like, yeah.
Or even just, like, drive across a couple state lines in 2 hours. Like,
yeah,
you can't
right?
get out of Washington from Seattle in two
that
hours.
That blows like,
if you
my
live
mind.
On the East Coast, you're going to take yeah. forever.
Yeah, no, definitely. And so I think that's kind of one of those things where it when I, like, intellectually, like, it's so hard for me to relate, like, just from that core gut feeling that you get about living, you know, whatever. But it's hard for me to relate from the thought of going from Florida, for example, to Washington and having a really tough time simply from my own experience. But I totally, from an intellectual standpoint, when I stop and think about it, I'm like, oh yeah, man, that would suck. Like, that would be so hard to go from there to here. How on earth could you, like, I can't blame someone for maybe, you know, not performing as well as they could. And I yeah. think of that, like, I can't even, like, I've lived in, for example, Portland for work, for relative, like, quite a short term stints. And even that, like, even 3 hours south, I'm like, oh man, that's far away. And so I totally understand the thought of, I very much relate to how difficult it can be to be happy and so therefore, like, perform as well as you can when you're not in an environment where, like, physically where you feel like it can be home. Yeah. So in that way, like, no judgment even in the slightest to somebody or, like, a players like that who would have a tough time with that move, because even though the Washington specific parts of it, I have to kind of, like, jog myself to remember that for most people in the country or world, it would be a lot to deal with as far as being this isolated. But the whole concept of not being in a place that feels like home and not being able to really function as highly as you could, that I relate to 5 billion%.
Yeah. Well, then there's also the layer of pressure, because, like, mm-hmm. I'm thinking now about, like, the whole sort of that group of prospects that was supposed to sort of turn the Mariners around. They were all from, like, the Southeast, like, mm-hmm. Kyle Seager, Justin Smoke, Dustin Ackley, Mike Zunino. All those guys are from, like, SEC
Florida
country,
and North Carolina. Yeah.
Yeah. Like, that would not be, I mean, obviously they're probably stoked to have each other, but, like, mm-hmm. just thinking about, because you got to imagine too, most of these guys have, if they've been to the West Coast, they've been to California. You know, you're not
yeah.
going to go on a family vacation from
yeah.
Goose Creek, South Carolina
to Wenatchee.
To Seattle.
Yeah,
but, like,
no.
Just having that of, like, okay, you're the, you know, we traded for you, we traded Cliff Lee for you if you're Justin Smoke, or, like, we drafted you number 2 overall if you're Dustin Ackley. Like, that's a lot of pressure. And then now also you have to go to probably the cultural opposite of where you're from, in a place,
totally.
Like you said, where the culture is very specific, very weird, probably not very welcoming, I would imagine.
Yeah, like, I've heard that we're not very welcoming.
Someone from the Midwest told me when they moved here, like, they described Seattle as, like, if you ask someone where is a good place to eat, they'll give you a list of 10 places, but they won't offer to go with you. You know, like, they'll try to be friendly, but not in, like, a social way, which I found very interesting, because now I notice that all the time. It's like that sort of that veneer of, like, oh, yeah, let me help you out. But, like, when it comes time to actually help, you're like, oh, yeah, no, I don't want to go with you. I was just making a suggestion.
Yeah.
So I feel like that part of, like, Seattle itself probably didn't help a lot of these guys, too. And then the Mariners being bad on top of everything else. It's just, like, the worst shit Sunday ever. And as an adult, I kind of get it now. At the
yeah.
time, I was like, why can't Dustin Ackley just hit the ball?
Yeah, why can't he be better? It's not that hard. Yeah, no, I do this mental game with myself where I don't really pay that much attention to the Major League Baseball draft other than the, you know, the first couple rounds I'll like, you know, follow it kind of on Twitter. But, you know, college baseball and high school baseball, it's not really a thing to follow unless you're following it specifically for the draft, which I don't do, but since I cover college football and obviously I'm an NFL fan, I am really pay attention to the NFL draft. And I do, I kind of do this thing when paying attention to where UW guys go or other players from Wazoo or elsewhere in the Pac-12 or Boise State or whatever, where just seeing, okay, you get drafted to here, you go here, you go here, and thinking, okay, would I want to live in that place? And even if I don't know anywhere about it, just the concept of like being in that physical location in the country. And so much of it is where it's such a weird thing where when I play this game with myself, I'm like, would I be able to, you know, do a job there, you not even play football, just obviously in my case, just like, would I be able to do a job in, I don't know, pick a Cleveland, because that's where Nick Harris went this year. And I don't know anything about Cleveland, but off the top, you know, probably most of the guys who get drafted to go to Cleveland or, you know, pick a city, they probably don't know much about there either. And they all have their own weird first impressions and preconceived notions of any area that, you know, might make it hard to put yourself in a mindset where you're thinking, put yourself into a mindset where you could are giving yourself an advantage to succeed. And like, if I can't do that as a non-professional athlete, like that's so much more pressure as a professional athlete to be doing that. So yeah, going from North Carolina or like the Florida Panhandle to Seattle, Jesus, man, that would be rough.
Yeah, I've done that little game you talk about so many times. Even just this year in the NFL draft, I was thinking like, okay, Joe Burrow gets to be the number one pick, but he has to go to Cincinnati. Meanwhile, Tua gets to live in Miami.
Yeah.
Like, that sounds way better. I would rather be on a shitty team in Miami than a shitty team in Cincinnati any day of the week.
Yeah, and at least with Joe Burrow, like I guess he's from Nebraska, but he was like, grew up as a kid in Nebraska, but he also, like, he's from Ohio, you know. Right. I think they list his hometown as Ohio. He was from Athens in Southeast, where Ohio University's from, and then went to Ohio State, and then went to LSU. So at least he has that, you know, there's some of that, like, coming home aspect. But yeah, I totally play that game. I'm glad that I'm not the only person. I'm glad that you say that you do too.
Yeah. So that reminds me, actually, did you follow Braden Bishop's career at all at UW? Just on the coming home aspect, like he was, you know, local and then gets picked by the Mariners, kind of gets to be a Northwester as an adult. Like, he didn't grow up here, but I think he's kind of claimed it as home now. What did you know about Braden Bishop before he was a Mariner, if anything?
Yeah, I mean, I just knew he was a UW guy. I don't really follow UW baseball. I follow UW softball because, you know, I grew up playing softball and going to Coach Tarr's clinics, and Coach Gott, well, she's not a coach there anymore. She hasn't been for a while, but like Coach Gott taught me how to throw a changeup, for example. I followed them. I didn't really follow baseball that much. But yeah, I knew of him and I knew a lot of his story, you know, about his foundation with his mom and stuff. And then I think it was last summer. Yeah. And then this summer, a friend of mine who I grew up with, she's a couple years older than me. She played soccer at UW, and her fiance played baseball at UW. So they, he would have overlapped with Bishop. And so then I like saw her mom and she's like, oh yeah, so-and-so, like she's at a wedding for, oh, that one guy, he's like with the Mariners, he played at UW. And I'm like, oh shit, they're at Braden Bishop's wedding. And then I'm like, oh yeah, like you guys knew him. Oh, I knew that. So yeah, that was like the extent of me knowing about him, was like, I knew that he's a UW guy. I knew he had his foundation, and I knew that I knew that he was like a friend of a friend.
Yeah. That, it felt like he was in your orbit, but like,
personally at all.
Yeah. I think though a lot of us were surprised that he made the big leagues. That's not meant to be like diminishing, you know, it's just not everyone makes the big leagues, obviously. And especially, you know, a guy with his skill set, he can do a couple things really well, but he's not great at one thing. So I guess my question to you then is like, what do you think, if you can put your scout hat on, do you think Braden Bishop will have a career in Major League Baseball? Like, what do you see his lifespan turning out to be with the Mariners?
Man, I wish I could put a good scout hat on. and I suppose if I actually was having a conversation about this today on Twitter, with a little Twitter buddy of mine about qualitative versus quantitative analysis. I'm really, even though I recognize that like the Moneyball style, like advanced metrics is super, super, super useful and really great, and it has improved the efficiency of so all these organizations, I'm bad at it. I'm not bad at it. You can't be bad at it. You just look at numbers and interpret them. But I don't tend to naturally gravitate towards that. I have no idea what Bishop's, any of his advanced stats are. I don't know what they were in college. I wish I had a little bit more time before this, because then I would have totally scouted just like game film just to watch, because I love like qualitative analysis kind of stuff. But so I wish I could say that I knew. I don't. But I mean, is he in AAA right now, or is he double?
He was kind of back and forth. I don't think he ever went all the way down to AA last year, but he was kind of between AAA and the big leagues, I believe.
Yeah.
Again, I'm not the minor league expert here by any stretch of the imagination.
We need to call one of, be like, what's the Who Wants to Be a Millionaire, like phone a friend thing? Phone one of the other Lookout Landing minor league baseball gurus. But I mean, just from a standpoint of, I think there's so many stories of, So many of the like mythical figures in Mariners history are transplants, whether it's Griffey or Edgar or whoever, or Jay Buhner. And I think there is, it's so cool having that. And I think other than Willie Bloomquist, there's kind of this vacuum of local, or, you know, relatively, guys, where if Bishop were to be a regular big league player, and contribute and be meaningful, and if this rebuild that I hope that wasn't COVID, if this rebuild, you know, is legit, and if there ends up a good team at the end of the tunnel that can do something, I think it, just from a narrative standpoint, having a guy like Bishop on the team for that would be something that would be really cool. Talking as a fan, like, since I can't offer an actual meaningful, insightful answer there.
No, that was great though, because you got me on a different topic by the
there
end
we go.
Of the spiel.
That was on purpose, totally.
It's just, it would be, you're totally right. Like, it would be so much more special to have a great Mariners team with like a contributing piece that's from the area. Like, mm-hmm. And I was going to say, I didn't even know, I remember watching a game with my dad maybe 4 or 5 years ago, and Mike Blauer started talking about his high school career, and it was like in the Tacoma area, and I was like, wait, Mike Blauer is from here? And my dad was like, yeah, you didn't know that? I was like, I had no idea, because you just don't associate anyone with like playing baseball in
except for John Olerud. I forgot about him until right now.
Yeah, exactly. It's easy to do, and like, even you know, it makes sense, obviously, like, oh, that's why he's with Root Sports, and like why he has such a connection to the Mariners.
Totally. But
know it until you're confronted by it.
Yeah. And I also think that there's really something special about guys like, I mean, even take Russell Wilson, for example, is a really good example of that, of people who come, who are transplants and come to a team or an area and really kind of buy into it. I think they're like, I mean, that's kind of, you know, Ken Griffey Jr.'s thing. That was back to Joe Burrow. That's kind of what made him such a hero at LSU, is his journey from Ohio to LSU and adopting Louisiana and all that. I think there's something really special about those guys who come from somewhere else and choose to be a Seattleite or a Pacific Northwesterner or whatever by choice, instead of, you know, just coincidentally, like, being born here. Like, you shouldn't, you know, like, I don't deserve more credit for being born here, I guess. But yeah, I think there's equally something special and about a guy like Bishop, you know, if he's able to join, you know, come from UW. And I feel like he's actually kind of interesting, because he, as far as I know, he is from California, but kind of already having become that, an adopted Washingtonian. So having hit that part of the process earlier before becoming a Mariner.
Yeah, and now I think the closest thing we have is Marco Gonzalez. I don't know if you are up on his...
Yeah, he's Gonzaga, right?
Yeah, he went to Gonzaga, but he's also now doing, like, COVID PSAs through the Mariners Twitter and his own Twitter, and his wife is very active on social media. It also helps that they're like both very good looking people. Like they're very they're very camera ready, and they have this dog that like sits on his lap while he's like telling people to wash their hands and shit. And it's so funny to me because it's like, yeah, Marco Gonzalez went to Gonzaga, which if you're, you know, it's Washington, but it's much closer to Idaho. And like he's from Colorado, and their Mariners are like, do you want to be our local guy? Yes. If you want me to tell people to wash their hands, I can do that. Like being the sort of honorary spokesman for the Mariners by proxy is is very funny to me. And it's funny to watch it play out too, because I don't think Marco expected to be the ace, you know, and now he's the best pitcher the Mariners have had for the last 2 years.
Yeah, I really, really enjoy watching him. And, you know, this goes back to, I'm kind of taking this on a tangent since that's not what we were just talking about, but just purely from an on-field standpoint, I think watching his watching his pitching is really fun, and it's kind of goes back to me being appreciating quantitative like metric studies and all that, but really just the enjoyment comes from the qualitative aspects of everything. And I really enjoy his pitching. He's been one of my, him and like D Gordon have been two of my favorites the last 2 years, 3 years.
Yeah, no, I get it. And I, this is not a football podcast, obviously, but in case anyone out there didn't know, the NFL made Game Pass free. So you can watch like any full game from the last like 8 years on NFL Game Pass. So I've been like kind of recreating Russell Wilson's career, or not recreating, rewatching it, you know, like starting from the beginning and seeing like, oh my God, he's so much better at this. And like, it's those little, you know, I don't have a number for it. I don't know his percentages or any of that shit, but like, you notice little things like, oh, he doesn't peel out of the pocket anymore. He steps up, and like just little things like that. And with Marco, it's very similar. Like he's going deeper into games now, and like he knows how to sort of, I guess, save himself. You know what I mean? Like you can tell that he's
totally,
not
yeah.
trying to throw the ball through the catcher's glove or like, you know, get 20 outs in the first inning sort of thing. Like he's actually a pitcher now, which is so nice to see. Because also I think, I mean, he came up with the Cardinals as a reliever. So I think when you come up as a reliever, you're kind of conditioned to like let it all out of the tank, you know, if you're only pitching an inning.
Yeah, totally.
Well go balls to the wall. And now it's like, okay, Marco, we need 7 innings from you and our bullpen is terrible. Like, here you go.
Our bullpen sucks shit. So it's on you, bud. Okay. I'm going to go make myself a martini and watch from the press box.
Yeah. That's the thing though. Like I know that professional athletes don't think like this and that's why they are professional athletes. But like, there's got to be at least one guy who's like, oh my God, we're on a bad team. No one expects anything from me. This is great. Like I can just be mediocre all season and no one will care. Like, you know, a middle reliever or like the fourth outfielder who just kind of gets to hang out. That's the dream for me.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you say that professional athletes don't think like that and, you know, successful ones certainly don't. But like, I don't know if you follow hockey at all, but there were these like private messages from Washington Capitals. He was like a fourth liner, barely like a journeyman named Brendan Leipsic. He was with Vancouver actually a couple years ago, and he's like been bounced around teams for every year. He's like barely stayed on a team for more than a season or two, and then he had all these. Private messages come out where he's being like the one of the shittiest people you could imagine, and then you couple that with, oh, you've just been bouncing around teams all the time, like you clearly have that attitude that you're just talking about of like not really giving a crap, just like just enjoying being a former hotshot, you know. So I think you're right in that successful athletes certainly don't think that way, But I think they're, you know, it seems like every once in a while you find some people that are kind of like that. And you're like, oof, you're not great.
Yeah. Well, and that's a weird, like, mental gymnastics, too. Mm-hmm. Because in any other line of work, like, I guess for me, like, in my day job, I'm never like, oh, my God, I need to be the absolute best I can be. Like, I need to carry my company to a championship. You know what I mean? It's like, I relate much more to the people who are like, yeah, I'm just, I know, I clock in, I clock out, whatever. Then I relate to them much more than the people who are like throwing themselves into their work. So it's funny that for athletes, I want the exact opposite. Like if they're on my team, at least I'm like, just act like you care. Even if you don't really care about the Mariners, please make it seem like you want them to win more than another team, even though it's just your employer. Like we've all been there. We all have, you know, I think I said this earlier, we all have jobs that we haven't loved, but you have to do them anyway. And I wish that there was just more transparency there, I guess, and that players could feel more comfortable being like, yeah, we're going to suck this year, but, you know, I've got a contract through the end of the season, so I'll be here. You know,
yeah.
I wish that was just more allowed.
Like, that would be pretty funny.
Take themselves way too seriously as a generality.
That would be pretty funny to see the fan reaction if, like, one team all of a sudden became super transparent. Although, on the other hand, I think you say, for example, you know, you've had jobs that, and so have I, where you just don't really give that much of a crap. But, like, I think there's a certain level of the difference, I mean, besides the obvious, between a professional athlete's getting a check and just our, you know, a normal layman's normal job. Because I think of, yeah, certainly there's jobs I've had where I didn't care that much or whatever. But then also I think of those jobs weren't there wasn't anything really there to achieve to bring fulfillment to either me or a whole group of people on top of that, like,
it's not,
if you're an
public
athlete,
facing either. It's not on TV every night.
But I also, I think of, like, for example, if I'm with my writing or whatever, at UWDP or stand up or who gives a crap, where, even if I suppose, you know, I'm not making that much money doing that, but you make a little bit. And so I suppose you could call it quote unquote a job. But I think there's something to be said for something like that that's being received by other people, or which is, you know, just like a an athlete, like they're doing something that is also for the enjoyment of others. And I think wanting to do your best, both for your own fulfillment, to know that you're doing the best version of what you can do, and to know that there are other people that are relying on you, kind of. And so I think there's a combination of your own self-actualization and, frankly, selflessness for others. Because
there's always that feeling too that you talked about, like the $20 you make from hosting an open mic feels way more meaningful than the, like, full ass paycheck you get from your corporate job. Even though,
I don't know,
like,
how bad's the open mic?
But, like, even if it's a fraction of, you know, like, I would imagine the sports equivalent of that would be, like, I don't know, having one really good game, maybe, like, one really good playoff game in a career that's mostly forgettable. You know what I mean? Something like that, where it's just, like, you had the one thing that, like, you cared about and that you were proud of. Meanwhile, you had seven seasons in Tampa that no one watched.
Yeah, there's a certain amount of pride because of how much it relates to more than just you. I think that probably goes into it versus, like, I don't know, I worked at a car wash in high school. Didn't really care that much about that because there wasn't that many people to, you know, what did my giving a crap, how did that affect others or my own fulfillment? It didn't. So.
With the Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details. With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Yeah, I don't know.
So, Gaby, where are you from? How did you become a Mariners fan in the beginning? Like, how did the Mariners enter your life? What do you remember about the time in your life where you became aware of the Seattle Mariners?
Yeah, I'm from a forest in South Snohomish County, kind of over by Maltby, which people mostly only know for the Maltby Cafe, which is fine because there's nothing there.
I actually played a lot of baseball in Maltby.
Oh, I know the exact park you're talking about because that's where my grandma would take me when she was taking care of me, and I would go down that little purple slide. Okay, but I digress.
One of the teams in our league. I grew up in Sammamish, so we would drive to Maltby a lot, actually, and they would come to us, the Maltby Mudcats.
Yeah. There's that I didn't ever play softball there, but we played soccer there. Yeah, okay, this is the part of the podcast where anyone listening is like, God, this is so boring. Nobody cares about this little park in Maltby.
Well, you think that, but you also remember how local our audience is. And some people, true. There's going to be one person out there from Maltby who feels extremely validated for listening this long.
There will be like one person from Snohomish who's like, I know, it's on Broadway.
Yeah, then they tweet your address and you're like, no, shit.
Yeah, don't dox me, please. what were we so, I mean, I was really young when 1995 happened, so I don't remember it, like, personally. I mean, although, but one of my first words was Edgar, and, yeah, that's the cute, that was the cutest thing I've ever, cutest fact about me, and then it was all downhill. But I just remember, I think, kind of similar to with UW, where there was a certain amount of not sucking from, like, the, I mean, UW was kind of going downhill from the Don James era at that time, but of like the mid to late 90s to like 2001, where I just took for granted that there were all these superstars on a team that kicked relative in my own little child mind. But I remember liking Dan Wilson because he was number 6 when I was 6 years old. Sure. And then it turned out that he was quite good at his job. And similarly, like with Edgar, who I liked, I mean, after he was my first or like third word or whatever, I liked because he was number 11 and that was my number I picked for sports. And then I found out, oh, he's really good too. And then, like I said, Ichiro came along and like I said, Ichiro was my friend's first crush. But yeah, I think I can't really say there's any one thing that made me a Mariners fan. It was just kind of just like with UW, where I grew up in a way where it was just taken for granted or assumed. It was just on. And that's actually how I have glasses, because I have very, very, very bad vision that is bad enough where it cannot be accurately measured. And the way that my parents found out I needed glasses was because I would stand directly in front of the TV to check scores when the Mariners were playing. And like, so it feels like a very much like a central pillar of many of my own experiences growing up were in some way, either directly or indirectly, revolved around the Mariners or whatever in some little way. And also both my parents were actually at the double.
Wow.
So they witnessed that in person, those assholes. And like one of the cheat codes, for example, I have mentioned this, if anyone has talked to me about Mariners baseball, they know this to be true, that the cheat code to making me cry, and my dad will do this to me to mess with me, and I hate it because it works so well, is just to play Dave Niehaus's Call of the Double. And so, like, for example, when we were watching episode 3 of Dorktown with my sister and my brother-in-law, I, like, had to, like, slowly over the course of the episode get prepared, because I knew, I'm like, oh, I know it's coming. I know it's unavoidable. Maybe I can make it through the whole call without silent sobbing. I can't. I never can. So it's just like these weird little things of, of them just being kind of the one constant, not the one constant that makes it sound like I had some terrible life, but like the Mariners are kind of just this constant thing. That has never not been around. Like, I can't really ever remember them not being a thing and ever not caring about them. Similar to UW football and then later softball and crew, where I don't remember ever not having that as a presence in my life. And then it turns out that when I was little and all the players who I cared about and imprinted on, it turns out they all were really good. Yeah. And then it was all downhill. So, you know, but what?
That's the purest fandom, though, the one you're describing, where it's just like you come out of the womb and you're like, oh, okay, this is what we're doing. We're all watching the Mariners. Like, you know who Dave Niehaus is before you fully understand, like, who some of your uncles are. You know, I definitely had that.
Yeah, that's so true. Yeah, and I remember... like, after Griffey went, I think the first player who I consciously chose that they kicked ass and I loved them was, like, Mike Cameron.
Yes, hell yes.
Yeah, he was dope. And but yeah, I think it was like kind of all up to that point, like that whole crew of ass kickers that I just like. It was like through osmosis that I cared about them.
It's so funny how like mythic that era is, especially for people, yeah. It sounds like of our age. I'll lump mm-hmm. us together because I was also very young in 95. But like you have, I mean, obviously like we know like Griffey, Edgar, they're literal Hall of Famers. We know they were very good. But like for me on that 01 team, because the team just won so much, I assume that every player was elite. And then you go back and look and you're like, oh, Paul Abbott, he was whatever, you know, like guys yeah. were playing a lot, you know, or like Al Martin, Stan Javier, David Bell, like the role players that you think are like great are just like kind of there. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But at the time, you're like, this guy is surely a top five player in his position, you know?
Yeah. Although on the other hand, like I think from the last two decades of being terrible has kind of imprinted in my head that I just assume, you know, you just take for granted that like every year there's just going to be a bunch of players who you're like, who are you? You aren't that good. Okay, whatever. And then I rewatched, I think it was on Easter, Root Sports or someone was playing like the first game of 2001. And they're going through the lineup and you're like, oh my God, this is such a stacked team. Like you're going through like John Allred, Brett Boone, I think Carlos Guillen, mm-hmm. Who was the star? Arthur Rhodes, I think, pitched that game. Kazu, Sasaki, closed it. Like, Ichiro, Mike Cameron. Oh, who was the other outfielder? I don't remember. But, and like, I think, yeah, and Dan Wilson was still there.
Yeah,
right?
You still have Edgar, yeah. too. You have Freddy
yeah.
Garcia.
And Edgar. Yeah. And, yeah, Freddy was the starter. Yeah, and seeing that, like, it was kind of wild going back to a time where you could look at a Mariners roster that, although they had, like, those role players, like you were talking about, you could go back to a Mariners roster that was, like, really stacked, at least relative to what we've experienced since then. And obviously the record, you know, stood up for that to be true. But that was pretty nuts from my own, from the rest of the jaded millennial Mariners experience.
I have a friend who, like, is a baseball player, like, played all throughout high school. One of my oldest friends, like, he's very much a baseball guy. And he has this theory that, like, the Mariners have been bad for so long because they never have what he just calls, like, ball players. You know, like, they just need, like, mm-hmm. those dudes. Like, there's no way to describe it other than just, like, they need some baseball players. And, like, for a long time, those role players, the guys who should have been the David Bells and the Carlos Guillens, were just so awful that you were like, there was no way to get attached to them because they weren't particularly likable, and on top of it, they weren't good at baseball.
Yeah.
So you don't have that, like, that sort of, I mean, grit is the easy sort of meme shorthand for it, mm-hmm. but like, it is, that is kind of what I'm getting at. Like, just that thing of like, you feel like you can trust that guy, you know?
Yeah.
The Mariners haven't had that in a long time, or like, you know, it's very like the Bill Simmons thing of like, you need eight guys on a basketball team to win a championship. Things like that. Like,
yeah,
it is kind of hokey, but like, I do think the Mariners have been missing some element of that for a very long time. Even when they were good in the Cano and Cruz era, you go back and look at those rosters, it really is on offense Cano and Cruz, and sometimes Kyle Seager if it was a good year for him.
Yeah. Although I think that it's funny because, and I think this is relevant in all sports, not just baseball. Maybe it's a little bit more prevalent in baseball, but either way, I feel like there's those players that are really, really good, and then there's also players that are not superstars, but they're, you need those guys who are provide kind of that depth and dependability. And then there's guys who maybe aren't as reliable, or maybe they are, but for whatever reason, they don't necessarily fit on the team, that are so fun to watch. That even though, and that was kind of what was so sad about that absolute gutting of the 2018
yeah.
Mariners, even though I recognized, like, intellectually I knew, I'm like, yeah, this is the right call. You need to gut this team and just get a crap load of prospects, build up your farm system, because we need to do a genuine rebuild, which we haven't done forever, really. But like watching guys like Ben Gamel and, you know, I mean, Pickett, that, so much of that team getting traded away, and you knew they had to, but it was so depressing seeing that because they're just so fun to watch, even if they're not, you know, they're imperfect, but whatever. And I think for that reason, like, having D. Gordon not be traded away was like the one saving grace, where I'm like, you are too fun to watch. Please God, don't trade you away. You know, even if you're not like a perfect baseball player. There's no, something I, about, yeah.
I love this conversation. That was actually going to be my final question.
Oh, really?
Everyone, it's a very common thread, nice. Obviously, for people to come on here and be like, yeah, you know, when I was a kid, Griffey was there and Edgar was there. They were really good. And then Ichiro shows up and that sort of sustains my fandom. But mm-hmm. I'm always curious, like, who was your guy that wasn't actually good at baseball? Like, a player that you remember loving and maybe you got older and realized he wasn't good, or even while you were watching him as an adult, you were like, this guy's pretty bad, but I love him so much. Like, for me, it's always been James Jones, the outfielder who played for a little bit in 2014.
Yeah.
He wore number 99.
He
and,
was
like, Tom
fun.
Wilhelmson, the relief pitcher who would always dance. Like, people like that are, I think, kind of like the glue of my fandom, because it's easy to root for Robinson Cano and Ichiro, but like those guys at the bottom of the roster are the ones who I think really drive home my love of the Mariners, you know?
Yeah, you know, I mean, those are both really good answers. Like Tom Wilhelmson and James Jones was really fun to watch too, and Tom Wilhelmson, his story was super cool, and so yeah. Like just having that narrative behind every time he started, or relieved, whichever, whatever. But I think, yeah, I think, okay, players, when we say not good, are we just like non-superstars kind of?
Sure, whatever your definition is.
Yeah. I think, I think there were also kind of a handful of guys who like were really good for a short period of time and then weren't, or we traded them away. I think JJ Putz, when he was like on fire that one year, was super fun to watch.
That's a great answer. I had his jersey in middle school.
Yeah, he was, oh man, that was, so I remember there was one closer who was chosen over him for the All-Star team, and I'm sure it was the right answer or the right decision, but I remember thinking, like, how on earth could there be anybody who's more fun to watch than JJ Putz?
Yeah, why didn't they consult me?
Yeah, me personally. Obviously, I'm the only one that matters. This is horseshit. I remember liking Kenji Jojima. I don't know why.
That's a great answer, yeah.
Yeah, I think I'm biased towards catchers because I did some catching, especially towards the last couple years I played softball. And the name Kenji is just fun to say, I think. And I was, when was he? I don't know. I was like young enough where I was like, he's fun to watch. He's a position I like. And for some reason, I'm rooting for him because he seems like a nice dude, even though I have zero reason or evidence to back that up other than my
always
gut
be careful
feeling
with that.
Yeah, you're like, I think he's a nice guy, and then you find out he like robbed someone at gunpoint, and you're like, oh shit. Also Bucky Jacobson was like a one-hit wonder of baseball players. This is someone who is in the Hall of Fame and is really good but is kind of like the anti superstar, and that would be Jamie Moyer. There's something about a really devastating changeup and like someone who pitches in so a different, like the exact opposite of what people want from pitchers. Seeing a 57 mile an hour changeup is the highlight of my life.
Yeah, I think that is, I agree with you. I think we share a little bit of the funny brain where it's like, the changeup is so funny to me because it's literally like, this is my normal pitch, but a little bit slower.
Yeah.
You're not going to be able to figure it out.
Yeah, I think a changeup, other than like a knuckleball, I think I could do a whole podcast on the changeup. It is my favorite thing it might be my favorite thing in baseball because it's not just like getting your guy out. It's not just the main objective of being a pitcher. It's absolutely humiliating them. Like, it's so right. Devastatingly burning, and you look so stupid striking out on a changeup. Like, I've never seen someone strike out on a changeup and look in remotely graceful. Like, at least if you strike out on, I mean, curves are pretty slow, but I don't know, like a good slider or like a high tight fastball. Like,
no, those make sense. You can see the movement.
It's dignified.
Like, yeah, I obviously couldn't hit that.
Yeah, it's dignified. And there's some semblance of like you're going head to head with some dude. You're both punching it out and he just beats you versus just like getting made fun of in front of everyone on TV. And that was why I think, man, I love Jamie Moyer. He's so fun. There's nothing. Oh, it was so fun because all he did was humiliate people and make them look so stupid. And you know what? If the Mariners are going to lose, we might as well make everyone else look stupid in the process.
Or just sign 57-year-old Jamie Moyer. Why not?
Let him
get a few innings every now and then.
Yeah, seriously. I mean, he could still do it.
Yeah, I mean, he could throw the ball over the plate. I don't doubt that at all. It's just if the ball's going to come back is the issue.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, I'm sure I could think of this for hours, but off the top of my head, I think those are kind of the main, yeah. I think Mike Cameron is, I already talked about him, and he's too super great. He's Superman as far as I'm concerned, so he doesn't qualify as an answer to this question. I think those four are my answer, even though Jamie Moore is cheating since he's in the Hall of Fame.
Yeah, you've got a great team there, even if one of them, like you said, is arguably the best pitcher in Mariners history, or at least longevity-wise. He has a lot of the counting stats that put him above other pitchers.
Yep, so I think that's what I'm going to have to go with.
Cool. Well, this was a blast, Gaby. Thank you so much for doing this. Now is everyone's favorite portion where you get to talk about yourself. So plug away. I know stand-up is on hold for now due to, again, the circumstances surrounding the novel coronavirus COVID-19, which you guys got to be careful of. I cannot stress that enough. It is out there. Do not get the virus. But other than that, what else is going on in your life? Direct us to your social media, all that jazz.
I really thought right there you were going to say, which I cannot stress enough. Or I thought when you were like, something like the coronavirus, I thought you were going to be like, which I cannot recommend enough. And I'm like, ooh. Like, or like, I thought you were about to like plug the coronavirus. It's like, have you guys heard about this hot new, like New York's hottest club is coronavirus. I'm on Twitter what is my Twitter? Oh, my Twitter handle is Gaby, not Gabby, which is G-A-B-E-Y, not G-A-B-B-Y. And it's mostly, I finished watching a Dorktown episode and then got like kind of drunk and put like 16 hashtags of GoEms in my bio. So you'll know you found the right one. I think I'm also the only Gaby Lucas on Twitter. I'm the only Gaby Lucas on Facebook. I guess I just gave people permission to creep on me on Facebook, which whatever, who cares? I mostly tweet about dumb stuff. And some sports, but Twitter's silly and stupid, so that's what everyone does on Twitter. And I just joined Instagram, which I thought it was like illegal to join Instagram in 2020 if you haven't already. My handle there, I spent like 2 days coming up with the name for this at Club Comedy Seattle, which when this is over, and you know, whoever knows how many years it'll be. You guys should go to Club Comedy. It's on 12th on Capitol Hill. It's really great. But I was hosting for Julie Kim from Vancouver, who was headlining, and we spent like 2 days coming up with a pun for my Instagram handle. So it's Gaby, it's cold outside.
That's
good. G-A-B-E-Y. It's really stupid. I don't have anything to talk about or post pictures of because we're all stuck inside, and even if we weren't, my camera sucked, and even if we my camera didn't suck, I'm not photogenic, but I do post pictures of kittens because I have two kittens right now and they're freaking adorable. So you'll get to see that if you follow me on Instagram, but Instagram's silly. They're both silly. You can do what you want. I won't be mad.
That was, not going to lie to you, you had us on the ropes there. The plane was getting a little wobbly, and then the kittens came in, and you landed it safely.
Yeah, that was, like, the world's worst advertisement for literally anything. Yeah, not and then it's convincing. Like, but, yeah, like, Instagram sucks. I suck at Instagram, but there's kittens, so.
You're the Mariners of Instagram.
I am the Mariners of Instagram. Oh, my Lord. I'm putting that on my tombstone. but it's true. You can put kittens in, on, with anything. Pick a preposition. It doesn't matter. Kittens, a preposition, and anything, and that thing is better. So, or at least somewhat compelling. So follow me for kitten content on Instagram and absolutely very stupid jokes and the occasional sports thing on Twitter.
Excelente. I am Matthew Robertson. Most of you knew that. Most of you hopefully are loving everything I post on the internet at mroberson22 on Twitter and at lookoutlanding.com. That's it. I have nothing else. Just like Gaby, I've been inside. I've been moving from one inside to the other. So my inside is different now, but it's better. and I'll keep everyone updated on that, as I'm sure that's what you listen to this podcast for. Go ahead and subscribe if you haven't already, and until next time, goodbye.